That's right. I mean, he was a psychologist who worked for something called the Air Force Sears School, which was designed to prepare some of our own soldiers for the depredations of authoritarian regimes, people who might torture us. He tried to retrofit those resistance techniques into interrogation techniques, which was really both a nonsensical thing, but also an offense, in my view, against the psychological profession.
Well, we're going to do part two of this conversation at democracynow.org. Alex Gibney, Academy Award-winning filmmaker. His new film, The Forever Prisoner, is now on HBO. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Wearing a mask is an act of love.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:01 and this is The Gap. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Lovely to be here in the studio. Hello Althea, how are you?
Hello, good morning.
It's fantastic to see you, to be seen, and to see as well. And for everyone who is just tuning in, I'd like to take a second to remind all the listeners that we are in the midst of our end of the year drive. And we are looking for your support. If you want to support programming like this and all of the other programming that you hear here on KABU, from the music to the public affairs and everything in between, you can help us maintain and sustain us by going to kboo.fm/give and make a donation today. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And of course, if you'd like to go old school, you can also use a good old snail mail and mail in your donation to KABU at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, 97214. Your donation means the most. Your support is why we're here and how we can be here. So if you can, please make that donation today. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Thank you so much.
Yeah, very excited to be here today. As regular listeners of the show may know, and new listeners may not, this is The Gap. We break our show into two parts. So in the first half, we have a very exciting interview today. And in the second half, we'll be doing our community question where we'll be taking calls. So get excited for that part, but also get excited for this interview we're going to be doing. We're speaking with two people from the Partnership for Safety and Justice. We have Shannon White, Deputy Director of Partner for Safety and Justice, and Julianne Jackson, the Movement Building Director at Partnership for Safety and Justice. We got inspired, you know, to speak to these folks a little bit from our show last week, where we were discussing OPB's investigation into the private security firm Echelon that's operating in Old Town. And learning a little bit more about, you know, crime, public safety, and what it all can look like. So Shannon and Julianne, thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. I appreciate that.
So
good morning. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for being here. So before we kind of like jump into the entirety of the topic, which granted it's pretty big, can you briefly tell us a little bit about what the Partnership for Safety and Justice is?
Yeah, I'll go. This is Shannon. Partnership for Safety and Justice is a nonprofit that's been around for over 20 years, and we work to reform the criminal justice system, both for people convicted of crime and survivors of crime, recognizing that a lot of times people have been in both of those positions. There's no binary between victim and offender, to use the criminal legal system language. And our framework is really about shrinking the system, you know, less incarceration, less policing, and more investments in healing and innovation. And I think that's a great way to start off this conversation.
Totally, yeah. And so, right, you both are working with Partnership for Safety and Justice to counter this narrative that's becoming increasingly common that the increased crime rate and the shootings that we're seeing in Portland are because of defunding the police or because of the houseless crisis. Can you talk a little bit about that narrative? Where does it fail and why is it so compelling?
Well, I mean, I'll go ahead and take this. I'll start anyways. You know, I think it's so compelling because, you know, gloom and doom is always a seller, right? Like, people hear that things are terrible. I mean, it's very similar to, you know, this summer when, you know, the rest of the world thought Portland was burning down, but really, like, there's like a three-block radius that's, you know, that's not doing well, and the rest of Portland is just fine. And so I think, you know, that narrative, I think, really sits with people, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I would also just add that I think, you know, it's simple answers are the easiest one. Like, we're all overwhelmed right now, and so the simple answers seem like the right solution. So logically, we think, oh, if we heard that the police were defunded and now crime is up, that must be, and defunded is an exaggeration anyway, but, you know, that happened and then shootings went up, right? And so in people's mind, like, oh, that must be why it happened, when the truth was, you know, shootings were spiking before any of that happened. They're happening around the country, in states that have more funded, kept funding the same. Like, actually, there isn't a cause and effect there. And one of the things that I don't think people know, because why would they, is that we don't actually know what causes crime. And often the news doesn't help us understand that what causes crime is complex. And I think logically people actually, if they were given that information, would understand, of course, that what, you know, leads to an increase in domestic violence is different than what it leads to an increase in murders or into, you know, property crimes. They're all very different. They're usually very local. And so what is important is that I think we as the public think about that it's complex what's driving crime, and therefore our solutions need to be complex, and we need, you know, immediate responses that hold folks accountable for causing harm, but also long-term solutions that really are aligned with our values. Like, what do we think people really should do? What do people need to be held accountable, but then also thrive after that accountability?
Right. Yeah, I want to drill down on that idea that crime doesn't have a singular cause, because I think that it's important, and it's like, it bears repeating, you know? It's one of those things that doesn't quite get, you know, the attention and the broader consciousness that it probably deserves. What are some of the factors that are in that conversation? I know you said that, you know, it doesn't have a singular cause. There's not one driver. What are those factors, and where do they fall short in explaining the entirety?
I think honest criminologists would say we don't really know. There have been so many different theories, right? And when they really research it, some of them will be like, oh yeah, that has a, you know, incarceration might have a 10% impact on lowering certain kinds of crime rates. And investing, you know, communities that are rich with services and good schools lower crime rates by, you know, 20%. There have been research done on the age of young men in the population driving the amount of crime that happens in a community. There have probably people might remember hearing about, like, is it abortion rates, lead poisoning? There's lots of things. I think what we do know is that sort of communities that are rich with resources and parks and services and good schools are not high crime neighborhoods, right? And I think part of what we've seen, particularly here in Portland, is such a change in the, you know, like the affordability of living here, which has really led to a huge income gap that we haven't seen in Portland. You know, I've lived here for 50 years, and it's changing. And I think there are a lot of reasons, and I think for Portland in particular, and for Oregon in general, we have to look at, like, locally what's happening, what's changing, and dig into those reasons so that we can come up with solutions that actually make sense. And I'll just add that don't cause the kind of harm that over policing and mass incarceration does. Like, those solutions, while they can feel like a quick fix, they're also ones that have had devastating impacts for Black and Brown communities, and poor communities for decades. And we don't want to turn back to that. Like, that is the wrong moral solution to what's happening right now.
Definitely. Thank you for that, Shannon. So I wanted to ask a little bit about those changes. One of the things that we have seen happen in Oregon is public health kind of turning into a public safety issue. So can you talk a little bit about that, what that looks like, and kind of how we got to this point? And either one of you can take that. Thank you. Sorry.
Do you want to go, Julianne?
I mean, I kind of misunderstood the question, so I was kind of waiting. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. Sure. I guess what I was trying to ask is public health and mental health has been an issue that we have seen come up when it comes to, you know, matters like that turning into public safety issues instead of, you know, public health or, you know, personal health and mental health issues. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about how mental health issues kind of have been criminalized and how we got to this point?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, I can't really speak to how we got to this point, but I'm certainly glad that, you know, Oregon is starting to recognize by, you know, decriminalizing drugs, by, you know, trying to, you know, offer more solutions. You know, I think that we are starting to recognize that this is not, you know, these are not criminal things. It is not a crime to be unwell, and it is not a crime to be houseless. And I think, you know, that narrative that, for some reason, these folks don't deserve, you know, these folks don't deserve to live well. These folks deserve to be put somewhere. I think that narrative is shifting, hopefully. And I think that's why, you know, it's so important for us to, you know, to remain curious and innovative with the ideas that we are coming up with to support folks. You know, when people don't have their basic needs met, it can become a safety issue. It can become a public safety problem. But, you know, essentially, you know, we are seeing that Oregon is kind of, thank goodness, you know, recognizing that these things are not criminal, and these folks should be taken care of in a way that, you know, that is supportive and in a way that's culturally responsible. And, you know, I hope that path continues. But I certainly don't know how we got to vilifying folks that, you know, that need our love and support the most.
Thank you for that. Shannon, did you want to add anything to that?
I just think, you know, Julianne's really right. Like, Oregon actually, over the last decade or so, has made some meaningful changes to how we deal with some of these lower level criminal offenses, also because in part we're starting to recognize increasingly, as she said, that these are public health issues. I guess that's exactly your question. I mean, the passage of Measure 110 to decriminalize substance abuse, essentially, you know, substance abuse disorder, is huge, right? Because if we can't incarcerate our way out of people's addictions, right? We have to get them the help and support they need. And so the hundreds of millions of dollars that's currently being invested into treatment programs is a huge step in the right direction for Oregon. And I think hopefully will help fend off, you know, I think a lesson to reflect on is that when the country really deinstitutionalized folks with mental health issues, extreme mental health issues, there was supposed to be local community investment, and that never happened. And we're seeing that crisis in our communities today, right? So our current head of corrections often will say she's the largest provider of mental health care in the state, because that's where folks who are in mental health crisis are ending up. And so the fact that now, with the passage of Measure 110, getting hundreds of millions of dollars into new treatment programs or beefing up existing programs is a huge change in the right direction for us and to create the kind of long-term stability and investment in people. You know, as I love, Julian, how you said that need our love and support, right? And when these folks get our love and support and are treated with dignity and have some self-determination, that's when we're going to get the real outcomes that we're looking for.
Right. When we were preparing for this interview, I don't remember, Shannon or Julian, which of you it was, but talking about how, you know, the system has reinforced by, like, you know, through I guess happenstance, but that public health has fallen on to police officers because they are established, because they are funded, but that isn't the best solution, and that there is a way to help folks who are in crisis, and that is not the avenue that is best to go down.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we're seeing, you know, programs in Eugene like Cahoots, you know, we're seeing programs across the country that are just doing it better. You know, we know that, you know, folks are not trained to deal well with mental, you know, we know that police are not typically trained to deal well with mental health crises. We know that, again, being an addict is not a crime. It's something you need love and support. And so I think, you know, we are witnessing, thank goodness, this, you know, this awakening where people are really kind of coming to that understanding. And there are so many different programs that are really showing us and proving to us that we're getting it wrong. You know, we're getting it wrong by making these things criminal, you know, by creating these criminal narratives. And then, you know, we're also getting it wrong by, you know, buying the narrative that, you know, more police is somehow going to make us more safe. Like, all of a sudden, if we have more police officers, that, you know, that there's not going to be addicts any longer, that there's not going to be a houseless crisis, that people aren't going to be suffering, that people aren't still struggling through financial ruin from COVID. You know, like, I think that narrative really needs to shift. And there's proof all over the country that we can do this differently.
Definitely. And can you speak a little bit about some of the programs that are happening now, along with, like, the shift of narrative that we're seeing, both from, of course, your org, but just generally speaking in Oregon and Portland? And, I mean, in the op-ed, you also mentioned California. So some of the programs that are proven to help people.
Yeah, like, I mean, for us, you know, in the Portland area, like I said, I did just briefly mention Cahoots. Cahoots has been doing a great job in Eugene for such a long time. And, you know, watching them get funded has been amazing. You know, in Portland, we have Central City Concern. There's Red Lodge. I mean, we actually partner with a lot of these folks that are providing services to impacted people. And as Shannon mentioned earlier, there is always, you know, this intersection between, you know, either being on one side of the system or being a victim on the other side of the system. And so it's been really cool to watch these folks really, like, dig deep and really work with folks in the community. So as far as Oregon goes, I'll let Shannon talk about California, but as long as Oregon goes, there are, you know, just a ton of programs that are doing it really well. POIC, I mean, there's just a lot of programs that are doing this work.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Julianne referred to Cahoots down in Eugene, and then Portland Street Response, there was just this analysis of their preliminary work here. And it's just so, I think this can make logical sense to folks, that people who are having a crisis related to addiction or mental health or the intersection of both and layering on houselessness, that having police show up who are trained in, like, safety and using their guns is not going to be the right response. And so I think that's so much the first level of, in some ways, really thinking about where our criminal justice system is putting a bunch of time and resources where it's not the people who are working for them. That's not what they've been trained to do. That's not their level of expertise. I actually think it's a point of agreement between reformers and the police. The police don't want to respond to people in a mental health crisis. They know that they don't have the right skills to do that. So the more that we can get resources to the local programs, I do think it's actually the responsibility of of localities, you know, the county, county and city governments, to figure out how we create more and more of these kinds of local problems, so then law enforcement has a much narrower focus that's actually more consistent with what they're supposed to be doing. And at the same time, we have to remember that anytime police are responding, particularly to communities that have been historically and systemically discriminated against and suffered violence at the hands of law enforcement, well, one, that makes people less likely to call for police, and two, it can cause more harm. So it's another reason to really be thinking about Julian was saying about how we invest in these other programs that create safety and strength in our communities, and our resources people will actually access, especially those who have been really harmed by our current system.
And you mentioned there's examples in California. I think folks are maybe, you know, more familiar with Street Response and Cahoots. Are they similar to that kind of avenue of, you know, response coming from a EMT, a social worker, someone with mental health training?
Yes, I think that's exactly right.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, it's great to see that. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Well, I was just going to say that it's great to see that that is becoming more and more expansive. So for folks who are listening, who are, you know, thinking about this a little bit differently now, are there individual actions that can help counter this narrative of the relationship between police and crime, and that those two things don't directly impact each other?
I think, sorry, hard to know who's going to talk. you know, I think, one, it's just like, I think the first thing we all need to do is be careful what we read and really explore our assumptions, right, about people, about, you know, like who's being seen as a criminal, who's seen as someone who doesn't have a home, like what assumptions do we have, but also what assumptions do we have about what we think causes crime and what prevents crime and what's a solution, like what are the options for accountability. You know, one of the things that happened recently is that we helped pass a bill that invested $4 million into restorative justice programs, which is a different kind of accountability than our current criminal justice system. It really brings everyone to the table to create solutions together, the person who was harmed, the person who caused the harm. And that kind of accountability is very different and I think more impactful for everyone involved, like I said, the person who caused the harm and the person who was harmed. And so those are the kinds of things that I think can really be transformative, and hopefully people will be careful before jumping to quick solutions that seem easy, but actually maybe entrench, like I said, systemic racism really that's in our criminal justice system.
Yeah, and I would agree. I would say, you know, we'll start looking into these programs that we were talking about today. You know, start looking into CAHOOTS and start looking into the viability of these things and why they work. Why, I know it's shocker, but why does supporting people and caring for people work? And, you know, I think that's one of the things that has, like, been really encouraging to me, to be, you know, looking at these programs and seeing their success rates and seeing what people are being able to accomplish after being in the system or prior to, you know, even going into the system. And I think that, you know, if people can really educate themselves on, you know, on not only, obviously drivers are tough to nail down, but if we can educate ourselves on the things that work, you know, it makes it very clear that over-policing doesn't. And so I would just advise everyone to educate yourselves on these programs, get involved in these programs in your community, support these programs in your community, help them get larger and broader so that, you know, everyone is able to see their effect.
You know, and I would also, because I know you started this conversation talking about Echelon and the private security downtown, and I actually haven't researched them, but a lot of these specifically, but a lot of these private security firms, there's very little accountability. There's often much more harm committed by the security officers because there's not accountability, there's not adequate training. And a lot of times they, like, switch company names, you know, like they get sued for abuse and then they rename themselves and rebrand. Like, we have to, private security is incredibly risky, I think, because there's a lot less accountability and that's another thing I think we need to be curious about and investigate, is like, what is happening with bringing in private security, and what kind of harm is going to be done to the communities that actually need our care and support. And look, when real harm is caused, we need to figure out accountability for sure. But like, is it real harm that someone who doesn't have a house is sleeping somewhere and maybe making a mess? I don't think so. That's not, we don't need someone showing up with a gun for that interaction.
Right. It's like the 38 hours, the whopping 38 hours of training that they get to just walk around with a gun and have the nerve to just point it at people and tell them to remove themselves when they have literally nowhere else to go. And if listeners are interested to learn more about Partnership for Safety and Justice and the action that you do, where can they find out more information?
Well, they can certainly go to our website, partnershipforsafetyandjustice.org. They can check us out there. We also have our other version, which is Safety and Justice Oregon, so you guys can definitely check that out as well. And then all of the programs that we mentioned, obviously you can, you know, you can Google those, but definitely check us out on the website. And if you're interested in getting involved and if this is moving you, I am the movement building director. I'm always looking for advocates. So reach out to me, please.
Yeah, Julianne, can you talk a little bit about what that looks like, being the movement building director? What does your day-to-day work look like with Partnership for Safety and Justice?
Yeah, so my day-to-day work is honestly working with other activists in the community, building relationships with folks, learning about folks. I happen to be very one-on-one with people. I really like to just get in the mix with you. So with people, you know, if people want to learn how to advocate for themselves, we want to do that. We want to support you in that. You know, processes are very difficult, and they're difficult for a reason. They're created the way they're created so that normal, everyday Joe Schmoes don't know how to navigate it. And part of, you know, part of the process of being a movement building director is showing folks how we navigate those systems and introducing them into our work so that they can inform our work, which is so exciting to me, that the people that are impacted the most are at the table. And so that is my, in a nutshell, that's my job. We want to keep creating seats at the table for folks that ordinarily haven't been there. And so, you know, I take a lot of pride in that, and I absolutely love what I do.
I can hear the passion in your voice for sure. And quick question, when you say that the people who are most impacted are the ones that are kind of informing the work, what are some of the things that you're like most surprised about when you first started, or I guess now as you keep on going with this position?
You know, I wouldn't say I've been necessarily surprised by anything, unfortunately. I think, you know, I was an impacted person, so I know how the system has worked and I know how it fails. And, you know, but what I was really surprised about is how many people in Oregon love other people in Oregon. Like, I was very surprised at how large our community is that really wants to, you know, to sort this out, that really wants people to be cared for in a way like never before. And I think that was so exciting to me, and honestly kind of strange, you know, just kind of growing up the way that I did. But I was just shocked to know that, like, people care. Like, people really, really, really care. And I know that's a weird thing to be surprised by, but that was really my only surprise.
That's a good surprise. That's
yeah,
lovely.
No,
yeah.
I like it.
I like that, yeah. And so, Shannon, I'm wondering about any, or Julianne, either one of you can respond to this, about any upcoming events or action that the Partnership for Safety and Justice is having, or any ongoing things that calls to action that you'd like listeners to be a part of.
Shannon? You know, we don't actually have anything, I'm just trying to think, on the calendar right now, but certainly if you go to our website at safetyandjustice.org and sign up for our emails, there is a legislative session coming up. We have a big criminal justice reform bill that will be moving this session, and we'd love to have folks engaged. As Julianne said, there are lots of opportunities to get involved, to, you know, email your legislators, show up at town halls, testify at committee hearings. And we'd love to have folks join us in that really transformative work that we're doing in coalition with a number of organizations, some of whom are the ones Julianne was mentioning, who represent people directly impacted by the system, really helping to come up with those policies and move them in the legislature. And then also on our website, too, I'll just mention is our crime victims report. So again, we talk about the intersection between, you know, folks committing harm and the fact that that intersection is so huge that they're most likely also victims. And so that report is available online as well. If you just want to get to know our work, you know, definitely go to our website and check that out. And we do events quite frequently. We just don't have anything on the books right now, but through our website, you can definitely get educated on the topic. And again, if you are interested at all in, you know, in taking part, if you're interested at all, if you've been moved at all, please reach out to me. I'd love to have a conversation with you.
Very
I'll just
cool.
add that we're, the survivor report that Julianne's mentioning is called When We Tell Our Stories, and focuses on the experiences of survivors in of color in the criminal justice system. It's an excellent report, even if you only read the executive summary. It's fantastic. And also, I would just flag for folks that there are two district attorney races. This won't be happening. The election isn't until May, but there's a contested race for district attorney in Washington County and in Marion County. Those races are often not contested, and probably your listeners might know, but the district attorneys are some of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, public safety elected officials in our communities. And so who we have in office there has a huge impact. So if any of your listeners are in Washington or Marion County, definitely worth checking out the races for district attorney.
Yeah, thank you so much. The DA is definitely, in Multnomah County, we've seen how Mike Schmidt has shaken things up since he's been in office.
Definitely.
But we are coming up on the end of our time. Shannon, Julianne, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate this conversation and, you know, breaking it down and learning more about the Partnership for Safety and Justice.
Yeah, thank you guys. Yeah, thanks for the conversation and for having us.
Yeah, of course. And
we'll
put some links to the resources that they mentioned on our show notes, kboo.fm/thegap, after the show. So if folks miss that at all, they will be there. This is The Gap. We've been speaking with Shannon White, the Deputy Director of the Partnership for Safety and Justice, and Julianne Jackson, the Movement Building Director at Partnership for Safety and Justice. Thank you to them so much for listening. And we are going to hit a quick musical break, and we'll be right back for the second half of the show.
KBOO Portland. So glad to be here with everyone. Glad to make things happen. It is The Gap. Oh. That is what you are listening to, and we're glad to be here. In case you are not familiar with our end of the year drive, you are actually in the middle of it, and I'd like to remind listeners, if you'd like to support KBOO in all of its glory, between the public affairs, the news, the music, all here for you 24 hours a day. You can make a donation at kboo.fm/give to help us maintain and sustain, thrive and get into it for the new year and many years to come. You can, like I said, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, that's KBOO, to 44321. All of your donations will be are very much appreciated. And I'd like to give a big thank you to Anonymous, who did donate at the top of the program. So thank you so much for that donation. Yeah, it really literally keeps helps keep the lights on. So thank you. Thank you so much. We are going to wiggle on through to our second part of the program, in which we open up the phone lines to you, the listener, for our community question. So Thea, if you'd like to hit it with our community question for today.
Yes, I would love to. So this, what we want you to think about today, I'm introducing this poorly. Here's what I was thinking about. Because it is December, many folks are giving gifts this time of year. I'm curious, what is your gift-giving strategy? Or what is the best gift you've ever gotten, or a gift that you're excited to give this year? You know, you don't have to, you know, no spoilers if your friend or your loved one listens to the show. but I think it would be, I'd be really interested to hear, you know, what is that strategy that you have, or, you know, just gifts in general, giving, receiving. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Sometimes it can be really difficult to figure out, you know, what to get somebody. I know I've been tied up in knots about it. My dad in particular is a difficult person to shop for. But I will say that my general gift-giving strategy, like when all else fails, you know, if there's not something obvious, some folks, you know, they are like, you know, really, really giving you a wink and a nudge about what they're looking for. But, you know, one thing that I always think about is like, what is the thing in somebody's life that I can fill that need for them? Like, And these are the gifts that I appreciate the most, is like, I have a minor problem, but I'm like unwilling to fix it. I don't know if that's relatable or not, but like, for example, I have like my favorite water bottle. I've had it for years, and I had a top for it that was, it would just like, if it fell on its side, it would leak, which is like deeply unhelpful as far as water bottles go. And I had a friend of mine who gave me a new cap to it. I was never going to get one on my own, but it like changed my life for the better. And it sounds so silly, but I think that's kind of like a sweet spot that I try to go for. It's like, I've noticed that you need this thing. Let me help you get it. And also maybe personalize it. Maybe you're a crafter. I'd love to hear about some crafts from folks. So yeah, give us a call, 503-231-8187. We do have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi.
How's it going, Jonathan? You're on the air with us.
Cool. it's going pretty good. How are you?
All's well, you know, hanging in there. We'd love to hear your holiday giving strategy for gifts and all.
Yeah. This will actually be the sixth year in a row I've done this. Every holiday season, instead of like trying to shop around for, you know, 20, 30 people or so, for my family and friends, you know, and trying to figure out who gets what and how to make sure that things are equal, I came up with this idea. My employer matches donations, and I came up with this idea of sending out an email to all my friends and family saying, hey, I'd like to donate, you know, it used to be $10. I've brought it down to $5 per person since so many people are on board with it now. But I basically have them provide an organization where they'd like for me to donate in lieu of a material gift. And then if my employer will match it, it'll get doubled. And if it doesn't, I'll double it myself. And it's really fun. It's really cool because I get to learn a lot about all sorts of different organizations. Every year there's a new one that I haven't heard of, that a friend or a family member, you know, would like for me to donate to.
That's very cool.
Very nice.
Yeah. And you get to have that connection even before the gift actually happens.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and then I send out an email around the holiday that basically lists all the organizations that we donated to and like a little blurb about them, so everybody can kind of see where our money went to. So yeah, it's been great.
Very cool. I love that idea. I think I might file that away, and I hope other listeners might be taking note. that, you know, a gift can be given. A gift can also be to charity or philanthropic organizations.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
There you go.
Charity, yeah,
that's
for sure.
Right.
I appreciate that, Jonathan. That's nice.
Yeah,
I hope they
you.
Have a fun and lovely, meaningful holidays.
Yeah. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks, Jonathan, our caller, talking about gift-giving strategies here on The Gap. If you'd like to call in with your thoughts on this, 503-231-8187 is that number.
I'm a terrible gift giver. I like that. I'm actually, like, taking down notes because I like, you know, I'm at the age where it's like, listen, it's great that I'm giving away, like, homemade, like, paintings and stuff, but come on. How much finger painting can a gal do, you know?
I would also say that I feel like homemade gifts are great, though, you know?
Yeah, like, but it's not like...
You don't
usable.
Feel like
you know, it's not
right.
It's not like it's not pragmatic. You know, like you're a great gift giver. I always talked about the coffee.
Yeah,
and how
that's
I,
one
I'm
of
drinking.
That's one of my successful
yeah.
gift givings was to Tammy.
Oh no, yeah, that was great.
Tammy, I don't mean to you know put you on blast at all. Tammy was drinking instant coffee, folks, and I just could not stand for it. But again, it was one of those things. She's like, yeah, I'm drinking instant coffee. Who cares? So I did get her a French press. And she's been doing coffee, she's been doing tea. So it's like, you know, a kind of little upgrade to somebody's life. It's not the most expensive present, but it is something that can make a difference, hopefully for Tammy.
A huge difference, and to everyone around me, because I'm insufferable when I have not had my coffee. And we do have Warren on the line. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Just rucking around out here. Anyway, what I'm trying to do, and it seems difficult... But I'm trying to give people gifts that are made of hemp.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, because I want to try to raise awareness about it, you know, how great of a product it is. Although I'm having a difficult time finding things that are, like, suitable for people. So, anyway, if anybody knows places where I can actually purchase a wide variety of hemp products... That would be great, and I should probably get off the air now.
Okay, thank you, Warren.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. Maybe there's folks out there that know that have the hemp hookup. I guess. Thanks, Warren. Callers, if you want to call in about hemp, or if you want to call in about your gift giving strategy, give us a call 503-231-8187.
I love this raising awareness. It's a calling a really great idea. I mean, I'm thinking gift cards to places where they have over-scented. Soaps and stuff. I don't want to name drop, but you know, well, I like this. This is nice.
Yeah, no, I think that can work. The other thing it made me think of when Warren called was like, you can kind of do like a 2-for-1 gift if you have like people in your life who do like make small things. Maybe you got a candle maker, a soap maker in your life. Purchase a candle from them, give it to somebody else. Now you did two good things for people in your life.
We have another strategium
okay,
on
please.
The air here with us. Harry, are you on the line?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And my strategy was get everybody the same thing.
Oh, nice.
One year when I wasn't doing very well financially, what I did, I went to the 99-cent store or the Dollar Tree or Dollar Store, and for 99 cents or dollar was a fingernail clipper and emery board.
Mm.
It was small, it was flat, so I included that in everybody's Christmas card that I mailed in, and all you had to do was add an extra stamp or two.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great. That's one of those things that you, like, you always
pragmatic.
Can use another one.
Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And also at the dollar store, I remember one year for 99 cents, they had a pepper grinder and salt shaker all in one.
Mm.
So I said, oh, this is good. And then right behind it, there was a case of them. of 20. So I grabbed a case of 20, and that's what I gave out for Christmas presents.
I like that.
Well seasoned, it sounds like.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I love that idea. Yeah, I did a similar thing. I bought like a giant thing of like reusable straws. Because I feel like everybody can have a reusable straw in their
life. Yeah, that's
and I
gave another pragmatic gift.
A supplementary thing, you know, tie it under the ribbon. It's like, you got to... you know, you can drink your iced coffee with a straw. Isn't that fun at home?
And, you know, it's interesting because you have, you have your gifts that you would like to give to your sweetheart. And then you have the friends, you know, there's like different levels to gift giving. And it's really an art. And I have not mastered it one bit. So I'm gaining a lot from this. I'm going to check out the dollar store. They have figurines there, too.
They do. Yeah. I am somebody who enjoys the dollar store, I should say, for craft supplies. There's some good craft supplies there. You know?
They have a lot of wooden stuff, like wooden things that are, like, usable. And you just can paint over it. Or, I was like, wow, I can do so much resin stuff with this here.
Yeah,
so
you totally can. I would also say, there's like, you know, sometimes you got to get creative, but if you have time for creativity, you can definitely make use of the dollar store.
That's also time for your creative. You got to make sure you give yourself enough time.
Yeah, I'm already grinding away on my non-work hours. I'm like crocheting like mad, embroidering. I'm like, I need to get this done before Christmas.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you've got a gift giving strategy, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We've gotten some great feedback so far. Also still looking for a hemp hookup for Warren, if anybody has that. 503-231-8187.
That shouldn't be too hard to find here.
Yeah, I feel like we can get it done. If you don't want to come on air and talk about it, you can email us at thegapradio@gmail.com.
Yes, we'd appreciate that. There's also the Instagram page as well.
Yeah.
You can hit it up there.
But 503-231-8187 if you want to call in here. Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can go about it in terms of gift giving. I like that you can do, you know, something that somebody needs, you know? Like, whenever I see something that somebody gave me and it's like, oh, I actually really needed that, I think of them every time. And
of
I, like,
course.
get a little warm. It's like, oh, this emery board? This is the emery board that Arya got me. And I keep it in my purse. I keep it in my car.
Yes, I'm just so excited about all this because especially the emery board. I need one. I just ruined, like, I just used mine up. So I can never find
one when I need one.
Of course.
And like or chapstick, I feel like.
All right, I'm writing that one down too. I have a couple.
I remembered another thing I was going to say. I don't want to blab on all the gifts I'm getting, but I don't think that my sister is going to listen to this.
No, don't say that.
So don't tell her, okay? But one thing that she was asking for was like a mystery box or a project where you get to play detective essentially and have all of these different like clues and stuff and like pieces of paper and you find out who done it, you know?
Huh.
And I thought that seemed like kind of cool. I mean, I think that, you know, when you're like a kid and somebody gives you get like little like craft kits, it's like, oh, you can paint this tiny like jewelry box or whatever. I don't know. That's the girl version, I guess. But I kind of feel like that's still fun as an adult, you know, like if you gave me something to do, I'm into that.
yeah, I agree with you. And we have a Sherry on the line to give us more strategies.
Sherry, hi, Sherry. There?
Hi, we actually heard this on KBOO a couple of years ago, and it's probably more for people who are giving to children that you have maybe way more options or for us, it's for our nieces and nephews.
Mm-hmm.
And it was four Christmas presents, one thing you want, one thing you need, one thing you wear, one thing you read.
Ooh.
I'm writing this down for myself. Can you say that one more time? One thing you want.
Yeah, I know. I had it written down.
One thing you need.
I had to go find it. Okay, the four. This would be like I said. I think this is really probably more for kids. So, okay, one thing you want, one thing you need, one thing you wear, one thing you read.
Nice.
I love that.
That's great.
Thank you so much. That has solved all of my anxiety around finding gifts.
Well, yeah, I think it outlines quite well what the kind of things are that you could get and what kind of niches they fill in somebody's life.
Yeah, and then it must have been a show that was on many, many years ago because this is in pretty faded writing. But the idea was, too, was that for parents, one strategy they could do with kids is with every new toy, they have to donate an old toy.
Right. I know when I was a kid, my mom was like, did not want the battery powered light up loud ones in the house too much. And not all of like the relatives complied with that. And
right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, Sherry.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good rest of your day. And I believe we have another caller on the line. I really like what Sherry said. I hope I'll put it in our show notes if you didn't quite get it on the rewrite of those kind of four little niches.
Yeah, and it was on cable. It's a full circle, as they
very
say.
Very full circle.
And we have another caller on the line. Linda, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. We like it. In my family, most of us are adults, and there are a few children to be considered in this. But when we gather, we do gifts that are $10 and under. Some of us cheat, but others of us don't. And you play a game where you draw, straws, and the first person gets to pick the gift, and then they get to keep it or pass it on. And it goes around like that, and you pick something that you think everybody would like. You can even have a theme for everybody. It always ends up lots of fun, and nobody has to put so much money out that they feel uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, having to make a choice about, can I afford to buy the ingredients to make cookies, or can I buy someone a gift?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a real struggle for people right now. You know, it comes down to little bitty $10. So that's why we do that gift, and it's worked really well. I have things that I would never have gotten that I still have from years later.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the funny stories we tell when we give them to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my suggestion. That's if you're going to gather with people, make a deal with each other so that nobody has to overspend or waste their money. And like one time I just got a whole bunch of those silly things you can get at grocery outlet that are like things you can put on your feet to have them get, you know, they're plastic things with goop all over them, and you tie them around your feet and wait 20 minutes. And
oh, yeah.
Eye masks. And
is it a foot peel? Yeah.
Scrubs and, you know, all sorts of things that you might not ever buy if they cost more than $1.99, but are fun to try when
yeah,
they do cost that much.
That is a great yeah. little niche. Thank you, Linda. That makes me think of, something I've done in the past, like something that somebody would want but couldn't justify buying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
you know, thrift store is a great place to find that. I remember I got one of my friends, like, a purse made out of vinyl records at a thrift store.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think
yeah.
It was probably yeah. only, like, $5 or something. But, like, I'm someone who enjoys thrift shopping. I know the whole thought process of, like, but do I really need it?
Am I going to wear it?
Am I really going to use this thing, even though it's $5? It's not no money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
when
I do better at Dollar Trees and
yeah.
stuff like that than I do it. I always get something home that I can't wear or isn't what I thought it was when I go to thrift stores, but when
yeah.
I go to Dollar Trees or grocery outlets or something, you know,
yeah.
Christmas decorations are very, very cheap when you go to places like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So putting something up that isn't going to last. So anyway, that's my idea for the year, and thanks for having the show.
Yeah,
thank you so
Linda.
Much. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, it's picking up on something that somebody might want but can't justify. It doesn't have to be an expensive thing. Just
no, I mean, how many
enjoy.
Times have you seen a face mask or a foot mask, like Linda was saying, and it's like $2.50?
Yeah.
And you're like, $2.50?
No, I don't need it.
I can't put just let me just slobber some Vaseline on these bad boys. No one will ever know, you know? But
right.
yeah, to actually, and like you said, you can, at the dollar store and at the thrift shops, they have little baskets, and they really, and depending what color things are on sale, the ticket color, if you know, you know, then things are like half off, and you can get little baskets
mm-hmm.
and get and make like a little like self-care, like I don't know, like a bath bomb in there,
yeah.
like some sort of stuff. It probably won't cost more than like $10 to make it, you know.
Yeah.
And then you can probably make two sets or something.
Right.
Yeah. And then it's like same, you know, thing where it's like people won't even do it, especially if you know someone who like is just starting to kind of get into the whole self-care
mm-hmm.
thing but don't know where to start, or if you know someone that works really hard, you know, like
yeah.
on their feet all day, I feel they appreciate it.
Totally. Yeah, you can, I mean, giving that kind of experience of like, hey, I got you like a quiet night at home, and it's like it's like a bath bomb and a face mask and maybe like a tea packet of like your favorite kind of tea.
Ooh.
Or something that you would drink in a relaxing evening type setting. I think that's pretty fun.
Or you can even get the whole thing and then distribute it into different like not kits. What am I trying to say?
Gifts.
Yeah. Like
yeah.
Gift bags. Like yeah.
Lots of different things that you
yeah.
can do. We're talking about gift giving strategies. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on this, 503-231-8187 is that number. We'd love to hear from you. We've gotten some great feedback today about all of the different things that one might adopt as their gift-giving strategy.
There is a strategy, and I have chapstick written down here. It's a lot.
Here's the thing. I can always use another chapstick.
Always. It's winter time.
Because my birthday's in the summertime, and between birthday and Christmas, usually somebody gives me enough soap to, like, make it through that part of the year. And I've been like, I don't buy soap for myself. I just take whatever somebody will give to me. And I did have to buy soap recently.
Interesting.
But I mean, hey, a nice bar of soap, that's nice, you know? That's one of those things that, one of those things that you don't splurge on for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, you're not gonna
get those $4 or $5 bars of soap made out of honeybees and all sorts of different things.
Yeah, yeah. You know, is it so super easy for me myself to justify going big on a bar of soap? Maybe not, but definitely when it is somebody else. Another thing that I'm thinking about, partially because I want it, also because I saw it at the dollar store and it is fun. For anyone in your life who likes to do their nails, like a nail art kit, there's like different little things that you can use and get funky with it. We still got time at home. Why not, you know, exert your creativity on your nails or give somebody else, you know, some kind of tool or art kit that they might be looking for.
Yes. And we do have another caller on the line with gift suggestions. Edie, you there?
Yes. In addition to giving to nonprofits and to other friends, we could also be working with different informal groups who are providing food, warm clothing, repair tents, tarps, etc., to our increasing thousands of Portlanders who have no housing, and distribute those. And then also at the Dollar Tree and places like that, there can be chocolates or Epsom salts or stress balls that can be bought in groups, or little flashlights or things. They can be brought in groups as gifts for the Pacific Northwest Family Circle to give to families who've just had a loved one murdered by the police, and then that will have years of harassment and character assassination and, you know, ongoing police harassment of the survivors. And so just having a little care package for them, for the Pacific Northwest Family Circle to distribute, would be nice. Sometimes United Grocers like that will have, or the Seasons will have, a big sale on good chocolates, that chocolate bars that one can bag up and then distribute to these families, especially Christmas time, Thanksgiving, and the anniversary or the angelversary of their loved one's death, are times when they really need some extra loving care. And it doesn't take much money, time, or effort for us to donate it, but it does incredible service and can prevent much worse health problems or even suicide. So
yeah,
please check out Pacific Northwest Family Circle. And don't forget to send some money to KBOO.
Thank you for that, Edie. I appreciate you chiming in there and, yeah, reminding us that it is also a good time to support people in our community who we may not even know, and that can look like a lot of different things. You could involve your family in that effort, too. Maybe we take a trip to the dollar store and think about what, you know, another family might want.
Ooh,
in that kind of situation. I think getting people involved.
Or you can reuse your cardboard egg cartons.
Oh, yeah.
And pour, at this time of year, there's a lot of cheap paraffin wax for home canning.
Oh, yeah, make a, yeah, nice.
And you add some sawdust, or you go to stores, they have pet litter, you know, sawdust. You add paraffin and you put the sawdust in the little egg cartons, add some paraffin over it with or without a wick,
for like
a birthday candle.
Fire starter.
And then these become fire starters for people who are houseless and cold and need to stay warm and have no litter or toxins.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Edie. We are coming up on the end of our time. I appreciate all of those ideas. I want to thank all of our callers who called in to give us their thoughts about gift giving and what their strategy is. I want to give one last shout out for our end of year drive. We're trying to raise $45,000 by the end of the year, and we really do need your support So if you have some funds that you would be interested in helping to support KBOO, you can go to kboo.fm and click on that donate button. You can text KBOO to 44321 or snail mail. You can find that on our website. We really do need our support, the support from our community. You know, this is the kind of content that we get to have on the air, a great interview with the Partnership for Safety and Justice, and a community conversation about how we can do some gift giving and show the people that we care about how we care about them.
Yes, and you can always gift a KBOO membership to someone who needs it, as we had a caller call in and want to say. So thank you, caller. That is very true. We will be back next week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And again, kboo.fm/give. For making that donation to make this happen. You can go to kboo.fm/give. Again, thank you.
Text KBOO to 44321. And thank you so much for listening. This is The Gap. Tammy and Althea signing off.
See ya.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right. 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end of year drive, it's the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us reach our goal of $45,000 by December 31st, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000, thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund for the Oregon Community Foundation. Double the impact of your tax-deductible year-end donation at kboo.fm.